Our story so far. What have we seen? That Dvarim to Mamona is a mysterious term, and it's made even more mysterious by the way it's presented in the Gemara. We know that it's some type of an element that's inherent in some situations, which is part of why we'll say Yachloku, let's say, versus other approaches. And therefore, it is fundamental to our understanding of Yachloku as a whole. But what it means is a subject of debate. And it could be that all of these views could be harmonized, and we'll talk about that a little bit today. But at least ostensibly, it seems that there's somewhere between one and four different interpretations. One if you harmonize them all, four if you assume they're all as distinct as possible. But essentially, the four possibilities being chisaron mamon, some type of a potential loss of money, that was the way Rashi understood it, some type of a shaychus mamon, which will render as some kind of a connection to the situation, which was a popular view among many Rishonim. Another permutation of that was a tvias mamon, a claim to the case at hand, which may be the same thing as shaychus, or maybe taking it a little bit further. We definitely saw formulations that seemed to have a higher threshold in order to be called tvias mamon, including some Rishonim articulating in some detail as to what the claim would be, not just their connection to the case, but why that claim is something specific to what they're trying to accomplish. And then Tostus's view that hecha debaleka tanoseihem yesh safek, where you'll have a safek even without their claim. And then, having looked at that, so we wanted to emphasize and to address one of the central confusions in our sugya in terms of the language. That it's possible that Dvaru D'mamona is used in different ways in different places, and that it's relevant to our sugya maybe in two different ways. Because on the one hand, the Gemara invokes it in Beis and Beis, and seems to say that Yachloku was a case of no Dvaru D'mamona, and that's why we need a Shvua. While in the case in Bava Basra, it seems to say that Yachloku in general is done where there is Dvaru D'mamona, giving you the impression that our Mishnah should have been a case of Dvaru D'mamona. And we suggested that really the two can be reconciled, that the language is probably used differently in the two places. And that Dvaru D'mamona essentially means a connection to the case, and that's what it means in Bava Basra. And Ochsin is another form of connection to the case. So it's occupying the same slot as Dvaru D'mamona. And when our Mishnah talks about Ochsin and Bava Basra talks about Dvaru D'mamona, there are two different formulations of connection to the case that justifies Yachloku. So when our Gemara in Beis Medbeis says there's no Dvaru D'mamona, we could either read it to say that it's using the phrase completely differently, or that, well, there's no Dvaru D'mamona in the sense of Bava Basra, but there's Ochsin, which equates to it. Or it's a question of degree. There's enough Dvaru D'mamona to force Yachloku, but not enough that we should be comfortable doing it without the Shvua. And then we got into a little bit of a parenthetical discussion, which is also very important to our sugya, the question of, is Yachloku with a Shvua some whole different model than Yachloku without a Shvua? Or is it the same Yachloku in both places? There's just an external din that because we're afraid it's too easy to pull a scam here, that Chazal also imposed a Shvua on top of it, which is really what the Gemara sounds like. I think Aaron was up first on my...
I only do a with saying that Dvaru D'mamona in this case is the Ochsin. Mm-hmm. Is that, I mean, the Gemara specifically distinguishes between the two cases, whereas, and uses that as a way to say why Simcha says Yachloku blow Shvua and ours Yachloku b'Shvua.
Right.
And that's so, the case in the Gemara, saying that they are different. One is in Dvaru D'mamona and one doesn't in Dvaru D'mamona. Therefore, it creates two different demons.
Right. So there is something lacking. The question is, when we say there's no Dvaru D'mamona, what do we mean by that? Do we mean there's absolutely no... Dvaru D'mamona is either a yes or no question, and Ochsin doesn't have it, and then we got to figure out how it's different from other cases? Or do we mean that Dror de Mamona is some type of quantitative measure, and it doesn't have it enough that we're comfortable doing without a shrua, but it does have it enough that that's why we're doing afloku? So it comes down to a semantic difference a little bit. You can read it a couple different ways. It all comes down to the same thing, I think. And I also, we pointed out yesterday that it sounds like the Tosfos Rid is kind of linking them. Again, linking them not necessarily meaning they are the same thing, but they occupy the same space in this calculation. And I saw today that the Nesivis also is a good friend for this. I don't know if anyone has access to the Nesivis online, but I did not put this on my Marcomos, but it's Ayin Vav. Siman Ayin Vav, Sifkat and Dalet, or Os Dalet, where he says, he talks about the fact that we find sometimes we say, Maman Hamutal B'Safek Cholkin, and he talks about the Gemara in Bava Basra in a second parak, which we referred to before Yantif in a different context, where if you have a bird that's found between two different chicken coops or two different people's nests, and it's equidistant, so then we split it. So he says, even though there's no Ochsin, says that's the case of Jarad Mamona, that's how he characterizes it. And he says straight out that the Jarad Mamona is Kimo Ochsin. Essentially spells out, I think just as clearly as anything we've seen, that the two are either identical or maybe not identical, but they serve the same role in terms of figuring out what's going on here. Hi, Michael. So that was what the Rashba was bothered by. We could formulate a way, if you had to and if you want to make all four interpretations really say the same thing. And we'll discuss that a little bit more. It's harder to say with the Rashi is the hardest, but not impossible. We could translate the word chisaron as meaning a stake. You know, like we say, it's an election season, right? Here's a good way to illustrate it. And so debates are in the air. So we talk about a candidate who's in the lead. So you say it's his to lose. Now, what does that expression mean? It means that because he has the cheskes front runner, so he's the one who, if he loses, it's a chiddush, so to speak. So I could force that reading into chisaron mamon also. But it could say that chisaron mamon is a backwards way of saying you are connected to the case. That you have what to lose, while somebody who's coming from the outside is not losing anything, is trying to gain something from scratch, but doesn't have any stake in the story. So I could find a way to say that chisaron is the same thing as tria, etc. The Rashba, who we saw, but just to restate, the Rashba says beferish that he doesn't think that Rashi works with Bava Basra. He says that straight out. And therefore he challenges Rashi's interpretation and he invokes all the other Rishonim. And in the end, the Rashba says, even though he challenged Rashi, but he acknowledges that Rashi's words work best within Bav Metzia Daf Beis. So he says, maybe Rashi's right over there, in which case you have to say the term means different things in different places. But his premise, essentially like your question, that he does not think that Rashi works with Bava Basra. Now again, we could probably force a reading into Rashi that will make everything consistent, everything harmonized, but the Rashba wouldn't agree with it, at least. So to get back to the Ketzos that we started yesterday, and that I know a lot of you got a chance to see today, so we felt that with this approach, we could address the Ketzos's question also, and we'll say a little bit more about that now, that the Ketzos was bothered by Tosfos and Bava Basra and Daf Beis and Aleph. And there, Tosfos talks about the case where you have a wall between two properties, and the Mishnah had talked about how it was built, or different ways in which it could be built. And if the wall collapses, the last line of the Mishnah, under certain circumstances, it belongs to both of them. So Tosfos says, well, why don't we say kol da'olam gvar? Which might mean, by the way, without getting into it, because it's a different sugya, it might mean that it goes to the possession of whoever it landed in, because that might be considered like an act of tefisa. That's a whole separate discussion. But why don't we say kol da'olam gvar in that case, says Tosfos, whatever it would mean practically. So Tosfos says, because that case of the rocks collapsing is drar d'mamona. So therefore, cholkin, echlokin. So the Ketzos was bothered by a two-pronged question. he's working off the assumption that Shnai Mochsen Batalis is not Dror de Mamona, because that's what it sounds like from Beis and Beis. And in his defense also, that's what it sounds like Tosfos is backing up. The Tosfos is that comment over there. So he's assuming Talis is not Dror de Mamona. So he has two questions. First of all, why are the rocks any more Dror de Mamona than the Talis? And two, why is Tosfos talking about Dror de Mamona anyway? Why doesn't Tosfos talk about its general policy, which is not true for every Tosfos in Shas, but at least for Beinu Tam's view, that the key element in Yachloku is Ochsen? So why doesn't Tosfos say Ochsen is the answer? So the Tosfos doesn't have an answer for Tosfos, has an answer instead of Tosfos. It thinks Tosfos is difficult, and concludes, therefore, I want to say, says the Tosfos, that it is Ochsen, that since it's between the two of them, that's called Ochsen, and that's the reason why we use Yachloku. The first daf in Bava Basra matches up with the first daf in Bava Metzia, according to the Tosfos. So we said, based on our approach yesterday, that we're not really bothered by this, because essentially, Ochsen and Dror de Mamona are linked, either identical or occupy the same role or close enough to each other. And therefore, I don't have to answer the question necessarily, why is the rocks different than Talis? Because I don't necessarily think that the Gemara is saying there's no Dror de Mamona by Talis. Maybe there's a lack of Dror de Mamona, less than fully Dror de Mamona, and we need a Shvua. But we don't have to say there's no Dror de Mamona at all. So we're not so concerned about distinguishing between the two. And then the question, why does Tosfos and Bava Basra not invoke Ochsen? The answer is it does. This is our version of Ochsen. Now you don't have to come on to the Ksos saying, well, it's called Ochsen because it's between the two of them. The role of Ochsen is being played tonight by Dror de Mamona, which essentially serves the same purpose. So I think that's a valid approach to the whole question of addressing it. You'll see that to make every word that anyone's ever said on this topic work into one straight line is difficult, but I think that that's a valid approach. Now, there has been a lot commented about this Ksos. We started to say yesterday, for example, in the Sefer B'Tzror HaChaim, which is available on Hebrew Books, that he commented on this Ksos, that the Ktzos is bothered because he seems to be working off of the Sheiches interpretation. That if you say there's a Sheiches, that's what's called Dror de Mamona, so then you're right. It sounds like the rocks and the Talis are both Sheiches cases. And why to say one has a Sheiches and the other one doesn't is harder. But keeping in mind that Tosfos has a different definition, that it means there's a suffix without their taina. So using that definition, maybe you could formulate things differently. And the way he does it, he says, okay, listen, when it comes to the wall, so the wall is a constant situation that presents itself automatically. We have to figure out whose wall this is. And the talus is more a temporary situation. It's a little bit of a subjective kind of distinction. Hi.
Don't you think that... saying that you're kind of like making your Ksos look foolish almost, that when he was reading into the Ksos, and all these questions were based on an interpretation that were obviously not Tosfos' understanding of what Dror de Mamona means. Like, Ksos should have known when he was writing and when he was thinking about this that obviously Tosfos' understanding of Dror de Mamona is not that of Sheiches. So it can't be that, like, oh, he was working when he was writing this within the notion that Dror is Sheiches.
So, right, that is more compelling. Right? It's hard to believe that that's the case. So, you have a good friend, the late Rav Nosson Shtetnik, so he says half of what we just said a minute ago, that he says that you can explain the connection based on the Sheiches interpretation. You can explain the Dror de Mamona of the rocks based on the Sheiches interpretation, which he equates with the interpretation of Tosfos. So as we alluded to before, that you could harmonize all these interpretations. He's not the only one to say this. You find this in earlier sources as well. That maybe Tosfos's Lekha Tanosehem Yeshafik Lebezdin is the same thing as Shaychus. We're saying that you have an automatic connection, that we don't need you to claim something in order to address it, that the claim is automatic. So that could be formulated as the same thing as Shaychus. And we're saying that if the only reason I'm talking to you is because you're screaming, so that means you have no inherent Shaychus. It's only the fact that you're coming and screaming. So maybe one could formulate it that that really is the same thing, that that is the view of Tosfos. And then you have to figure out then, so then why does Tosfos think there's a difference, if he does, which again we're not so sure, but why does Tosfos think there's a difference between the wall and the talus? So he says something here which I find a little bit difficult. I'll tell you why. So first he says that's shot on the Tosfos saying Dvarei D'Mamona by the wall, because he means Shaychus, and that's what Lekar Tana Sehem means. Lekar Safek B'li Tana Sehem means. But then interpreting the difference, I brought it in so you could tell me if you think you could read it in a way that you understand it better, because I find this a little difficult. So here's how he describes the difference between the two. In the case of the wall, he says, Shahri hakol modim shakosel hu bein chatzer shel shdei hashutafim. Everyone acknowledges the wall is between the courtyard of two partners. V'af below tanoseihem yesh lanu mokom lehistapik im hakosel hu shel ruven o shel shimon. And even without them saying anything, we have room to question if the wall is that of Ruven or Shimon. Daharei vada yitochin she'echad mehem bones hakosel. Because it could definitely be that one of them built the wall. And at the same time, each one acknowledges that the other one is the other partner in this courtyard. Country question a second. And that itself is a great connection to the issue. Masha'ein came b'shnayim ochsin. What's not true in that case. Shekol echa toein she'ein l'chaveru shum shaychus l'talazu. Because what is each one claiming? That the other guy has no connection to the talus. In the case of the chatzer, everyone acknowledges the other guy's got a seat at the table. In the case of the talus, each one saying the other guy has no connection. He's only here because he grabbed something out of my hand. Imkein ein bazeh drarer de mamona. Therefore, in that case, that's not drarer de mamona. What do you think about that? Is that a distinction you're comfortable with? Michael, you want to comment on that? You were going to say that. Okay, Jonathan, you want to comment on that?
When he was defining the case that since it was between both of them, we don't, since it could have been either or, so he says that Shaifas, but really he just defined their suffix both on a thing.
Well, that's fine, because he's saying that they think they're the same thing. Right? He's equating Shaychus and... So that's good for us, right? Because we mentioned before that they could be these different views are harmonized.
Right.
And as Jonathan Teitelbaum was saying, that it's hard to believe that Xos isn't aware of Tosfos Shita. So to say that Tosfos means that part we like. That part potentially is helpful. However, the distinction then between the wall and the coast, the wall and the talus, it's interesting, but I wonder if it's enough. I'll tell you what bothers me about it. He's saying, in the case of the wall, each one acknowledges the other person's seat at the table. Each one has to acknowledge that the other guy, by sharing this courtyard, has an equal claim that he does, at least before you figure out the facts. But in the case of the talus, each one is saying the other guy has no place here. This is completely mine, and this guy grabbed it out of my hand. So it's an interesting distinction. I'm not sure I totally see why it should be relevant, especially because we don't credit that part of the time at all. In the resolution, we give each one the half they're holding. So what part do we acknowledge? We acknowledge the rights to what they're holding, not their claim that the other person doesn't have any connection. We're kind of doing the opposite. We're only endorsing your right, which is essentially mutually contradictory if we believe either one of their claims, because each one said the other one doesn't have it. So I don't know how relevant it is, the fact that each one denies the other person's place here, but we're not acknowledging that claim with any impact in our ruling. So I'm not sure how comfortable I am with that distinction, even though it's an interesting point. Hi.
Even though we're not necessarily, in the term sucked in, we're not acknowledging it. We discussed earlier in the year that it could be that we really wanted to give someone 100% of the thing and take the 50% right, but because of the technicality, so we don't have enough evidence. So we're going to have to, by default, give be 50% right 100% of the time. Mm. It's not that, like, they really wanted to in that case. There's not enough necessarily.
And that's an important point, which we'll come back to, but I don't know if it fits into what he's saying. You know, what he said, the emphasis on the other person's role not being acknowledged, I'm just
right.
not sure how that... How that it helps to distinguish.
No, I say that doesn't make sense because in the end of the day, the difference is that we're not acknowledging, we're only giving it 50% of it. But that you can say that's only because of like technicality that we don't have enough evidence, so we can't say sort of kol dalam gvar. But maybe you could say that really he does deserve the whole thing. He's saying kol shali, and we want to give him kol shali, and at the end of the day, we can't because of it's this case.
There's another guy saying the exact same thing.
What?
Because another guy saying
the exact same thing.
Right. I have to figure out how that helps. I hear what you're saying. You should figure out how that makes it go down better. Hi.
I think maybe like what Jonathan's saying, maybe just a little bit in the reverse.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit difficult maybe because of their yedek munach issues, but maybe it's based in the saying we don't want to give either of you anything.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of saying we would like to give both of you everything, but we can't. Saying we'd not like to give either of you anything,
but we can't because you're hoping because you're also
because we know that there's a certain note, so it kind of is, you know, that is part of the ruling now. And the only thing is, I don't.
So let's look at it from that perspective, because let's put plug that into the equation. So we're saying in the case of the talis, we don't want to give you anything, but we have to because you're also. And in the case of the shutfin, we do want to give you something, but we.
So you're still in vote. You're the problem that you raised was that. That had nothing to do with the din and talis.
Well, actually, I guess if you also then throw in the fact that the whole difference is that case has a shvua, the case of the talis, so then that does correlate to what he's talking about the denial of the other person's role, so you counteract that denial with the shvuas. Maybe that's what he's addressing. Maybe you have to put that part into the equation. That the difference between the two cases comes out that when it comes to the shvua, when it comes to the talis, so you have the achloku, but you also have the shvua. So the shvua, reading into the Gemara, oh, the shvua because there's no jar de mamona. What does that mean, no jar de mamona? It means, somehow, jar de mamona means the other party doesn't acknowledge your stake here. It's a conceivable reading, I guess.
Okay.
To say that jar de mamona means you don't have a stake, especially in light of the other person's acknowledgement of you. All right, maybe that's that. I think that opens up a whole new vista. Right? That's a whole new approach in what Jared Mamona means. It means a stake that is strong enough that the other person can't deny it. Something to think about. That's interesting. It means a shaychus that not is a shaychus as defined by the fact that it's so strong that it's objective enough that the other party has to credit it. Could be. Rav Osner has a few tshuvas about this in his tshuvas Shevet Alevi. One's in Chelek Dalet and Siman Reish Aleph. One's in Chelek Vav, Reish Lamed Gimel. It says the same thing in both, basically. That he doesn't understand everything about the Ketzos. And one of the things he says is that in terms of the difference between the case of the talus and the case of the wall, and focusing on Tosa's Beleket Hanaseyem Yeshafik Lebezdin. So what does it mean to say that phrase? What does it mean to say that they have a taina without, they have a suffix without their taina? So he suggests that it means like this. He says, in the case of the wall, that wall exists, and splitting it will always be an issue. Let's say the wall never fell down. We're still going to assume that it has some potential splittage between the two parties. Let's say all the parties died, and their yorshim are now in the picture. We'd still split it. No matter what happens, this wall is going to end up split. If it doesn't fall, if the parties don't make any claims, there's no scenario other than splitting this wall. While in the case of the talus, we don't have any reason why we would be splitting this talus, except for the fact that these two people are articulating claims against each other. And therefore, he again thinks that it is justifiable. He doesn't understand why the Ksos has such a hard time seeing a difference between the two cases. It says, focusing on Tosfos' definition of the Beleka Tanose and the Shafik Lebezdin, so that's the case much more clearly with a wall than it is with a talus. Again, is that an objective difference or is it a quantitative difference? Maybe it's a more quantitative difference. We're saying this wall, no matter what would happen, this wall is always subject to being split. If it didn't fall in the first place, if the Yorshim were dealing with it, that was always the future of this wall, and you don't need the two parties to come and make up a story in order for that to be what's going to happen. Now, the Haraya is built into the Mishnah, and the Mishnah is talking about when you build a house to begin with. And so it's built into the situation that this is how this wall is going to be handled, so we don't need the parties to come and express it. A point, by the way, the other half of the Ksos's question, which is a point that the Nas Imperial brings up, but it works within everything that we're saying. So remember the Ksos's other half of the question, where he asks, why is it that Tosfos and Baba Basra doesn't say Ochsin? If Tosfos's opinion in general is to say Ochsin is the issue, so why does Tosfos and Baba Basra not say Ochsin? Sorry? In later Baba Basra, but in Daf Beis and Baba Basra, right, the case of the wall. So why does that Tosfos say Jorah Mamona instead of Ochsin? Right, that was Tosfos' question in two directions. Right, what's the difference between Talis and the wall? And since in general in Shas, Tosfos says Rabbeinu Tam's Tosfos at least says Ochsin is the issue. So why not say that in the context of Tosfos and Baba Basra? So there are a couple of good ways to address it. One way is the way we've been saying, that it basically does. To take that a step further, the way that Nas Imperio addresses it is that it also works in very well what we're saying, that if you're saying these are essentially the same role, if I can say Jarar de Mamona, I'd rather say that than Ochsin. Why? Not just because maybe Jarar de Mamona is stronger, although that's itself a good enough reason, right? Because we see a Mishnah is Ochsin with a Shvua, and in this case Ochsin without a Shvua. We say, I got a better reason why I'll choose an answer that I can say Jorah D'Mamona. Because that's a Gemara. Right? That's the Gemara in the third part. The Gemara says that when you have Jorah D'Mamona, so you're more likely to say Yachlok. The case where the two people are fighting over Zelmer Shlavosai, Zelmer Shlavosai. And the Gemara says, why do you say Kol Da'alam Gevara there? And elsewhere we say Yafoku. And the Gemara says, Jarar Gamona. So that's a chiluk that's in Shas. While the chiluk of Ochsin, that it's not clear that that's, and it's mentioned in the Mishnah, but it's not clear that that's a determinative criterion. That's an issue introduced by Rishonim. So if I had to pick one, let's say I technically could have said both answers, I'd rather say Jarar D'Mamona than say Ochsin. So in other words, elsewhere in Shas, when you can only say Ochsin, maybe it doesn't qualify as a full-blown Jarar D'Mamona, so you'll say Ochsin. But here, you can say Jarar D'Mamona, you'd rather say that. Now there's another reason also why Tosfos may not say Ochsin, and that's very straightforward, because there's no Ochsin here. The Ksos, if you saw it, the Ksos is assuming there is Ochsin. Now, where does the Ksos get that idea from? Which Rishon? Sorry? The Rambam, right? We talked about this before Yontif. The Rambam about the Arima, that it's evocative of that Rambam. And the Ksos refers to that Rambam. Right? Where two people are on either side of a pile of something, and they both claim it, so then that's apparently, according to the Rambam, subject to Yachloku. He doesn't get that from the Gemara. He introduces that himself. When the Rambam lists all the Yachlokus, he puts this in as a case. So the Ketzos says, yeah, same story here. So this is called Ochsin. So there are many reasons why you might not accept that answer. Can you suggest any?
Yeah, either you can say that A, we don't pass them like the Rambam, or B, that the Rambam's case were an applier because the Rima was something specific. I think that it was in a certain place where they would stand next to it.
Excellent. So then you basically got them both, right? First one you can formulate a little bit differently, but Jonathan very correctly points out two different avenues you could take to not allow that answer to be said. Aaron, you want to address that point?
Recognizing the symptom.
All right, so that's the second. So that's the second of Jonathan Poe's. Come to that in a second. But the first point, so he said we don't paskin like the Rambam. We don't have to know about whether we paskin like the Rambam, but why should we assume that Tosfos agrees with the Rambam? Tosfos probably does not agree with the Rambam. And so here, the Tosfos is assuming that Tosfos could have just easily said, let's call this Ochsin. Except that that would put Tosfos as saying the same thing as the Rambam. And we don't know that that's true, and it's probably not true. And the truth is, if you recall, when we spoke about this Rambam at the beginning of the year, so the assumption of the Nosei Kalim and the Rambam, and many of the commentaries later, this is Gud Chazara, is that the Rambam doesn't agree with Rabbeinu Tam. Right? If you recall this, Rabbeinu Tam was associated with Ochsin, and the Rambam was associated with the Riva, the second answer in Tosfos, that you don't need Ochsin. And what's the proof that he doesn't need Ochsin? Because what he says about the Arima. So the Rambam's statement about Arima was taken as proof that the Rambam holds you don't need Ochsin for Yachloku. So to say, Tosfos, why don't you just call this a case of Ochsin? It's like the Rambam's Arima. So first of all, Tosfos may not agree with the Rambam. And the Rambam's whole position might be that the Arima shows you, it's his way of saying, you don't need Ochsin. So to say the Arima is Ochsin is a problem according to that approach. Hi, Aaron.
Aaron Satoshi says that you don't need Ochsin. Why would it not be a keen cluster?
So then that's another question. So that's what we were about to get to a second ago also. Right? That then there's another approach that some have within the Rambam, which is also probably relevant here, that maybe the Rambam's whole point is not to say that any time two people are flanking something, you have two people on either side of something, then they have equal claim in Yachloku. There are circumstances when that will be the case. So, like you mentioned, the Sitma, maybe it's an alley that's common to both of them. So therefore, they both could have some type of Kinyan Chatzar claim, or some type of Dalet Amos claim. They're both within a certain proximity. So there's some reason, it's not actual Ochsin, but there's some reason why each one can maintain a greater connection. But here, so the wall started off between the two of them. And to say that, okay, because they happen to now be next to it, so for sure they're going to be next to it. That's not going to give anyone a greater proof than we already have that the rocks are theirs. So it's a stretch to compare the cases, either to bring the Rambam into Tosfos' camp, or to say that the cases are the same. There's a lot of reasons why the Tosfos' answer would not be satisfactory for Tosfos. So that gives us a number of different approaches to that question as to what, again, within the approach that we favored so far, the whole issue was really kind of harmonized. And it's all one big approach. But if you want to get more specific about it, there's a number of reasons why we could understand why Tosfos doesn't say, at least in terms of the words, what the Tosfos wants him to say. If we do assume that the whole issue of what the definition of Dvar de Mamona is, if we assume these are not all harmonized definitions, but there's a difference between Shaychus and Leka Tanaseim Yeshafik Lebezim, so do these differences reflect anything about the central questions we've been talking about from the very beginning? About, let's say, our preferences or our defaults in terms of Yachloku and Koldel and Gvar. What would you think about that question? Let's say, if I define Dvar Dvamona as Shaychus, does that tell me one thing about when I use Yachloku as opposed to, I say, Baleka Tanasei, Himei Shafik the Bezdin? Hi?
I mean, it seems to me that the Machlokus, at least Rash, I mean, if we say the Machlokus Rash Tanasei, seems to be. In terms of what level of a reglamo dabar, or what level of suffix do you need to say yachloku?
Okay.
So, I mean, you can really say either way that in terms of preference, because you could say that you need a stronger reglamo dabar because it's. I mean, you could say you want to limit the times which you. I mean, according to Rashi, you're more likely to say it because it's a case even if it's not a clear suffix.
According to Rashi, going back to the Chisar and Mamun.
Yeah. Okay.
But let's say the issue is probably easier to say within the question of Shaychus or Tosfos' version. But Rashi is probably even harder, but I'll listen. How do you want to?
I was thinking that if according to Rashi, where you're more likely to say it, mm-hmm. where it is limited times which you say Yachloku, you could interpret that to mean that he prefers, I mean, if you want to say Yachloku.
You want to say Yachloku?
You could say that the reason why Rashi, he's making Yachloku an option in more cases than Tosfos would make it. And it could be the reason why Tosfos.
By calling it Chisaron, you mean?
Yeah, because Chisaron would be both in a case where there is a suffix who based on belief time exam, and even if there is the suffix created only through the Balidun.
Assuming that's how it correlates, I guess it's hard to know if that's how it's going to add up. Because if Rashi is defining it as any time there's a Chisaron?
Yeah, any time there's Chisaron, even if it's a suffix only according to their times.
Yes, I guess so. Could be. But let's say, I think it's a little bit more of a complex problem. But let's say in terms of Shaychus, or Balekatana saying Meshafik Lebezin. So you could argue, as some do this discussion about this in the Torah Chaim, that Shaychus is kind of a weaker connection. Or, if you phrase it, it's actually a stronger connection. While the Suffolk is just there without necessarily having a claim. So maybe the Rashbam and others who say Shaychus or Tviya, they have a higher threshold for Yachloku. That you have to really have some type of a claim that we have to address. And if there's a Suffolk, so okay, there's a Suffolk, but if you don't necessarily have something in your favor, so then that doesn't necessarily compel us to address it. So if we're saying that Yachloku is something that we're more ready to invoke, so Tosfos's threshold is lower. While the Rashbam is saying, listen, we'd really rather go to Kol De'olam V'Var. We'd really rather stay out of the story. But if you guys both have a claim, we can't ignore your claim. While the Suffolk by itself, okay, so a Suffolk is a Suffolk, but it doesn't mean we have to necessarily get Bezdin exposed to a possible Yivus Adin, Zilusa Vedina, unless there is an actual claim articulated on your behalf. How do you feel about that suggestion? Could be. Again, we're not even sure there's a difference between Shaychus and the Lekatana Sayyim, but if you want to formulate it that way, maybe there is such a difference. This could also be relevant to another point. Did any of you get to see the Shita Mekubetzes in Baba Basra, and that quotes the Rimagash and the Ramban in Baba Basra? You got to see it? So there's a machlokas between the two about what? Right, essentially about that point, that if you follow the flow of the Gemara in Baba Basra, right, the Gemara starts off saying a case of Kol De'olam V'Var. And the Gemara asks from various other cases where we have different rulings and mentions two possible differences. Ikalam ekam ala demelsa, belekalam ekam ala demelsa. And Dror d'mamona is the last one. So what if you mix and match those? What's the key criterion for Yachloku? Let's say versus Shudu d'dan. So according to the Rimigash that is quoted over there, Dror d'mamona gets into Yachloku. Whether it's Ikalam Ekam Ola d'melsa, Lekalam Ekam Ola d'melsa, right, again, that term meaning that you could figure out things, or there's a potential that things will be clarified, or the potential is not there, and how exactly you define that potential is a whole debate in Rishonim that we didn't ever really get into. It's discussed in the Gemara and Baba Basra, how likely that potential has to be. But whatever, Ikalam Ekam Ola d'melsa, if there's a possibility of figuring it out, if there isn't a possibility of figuring it out. So, if that's the criteria, so if Dror d'mamona is the whole story, according to the Rimigash, that's when you do Yachloku. It doesn't matter, Ikka or Leka, you do Yachloku. The Ramban seems to disagree. Because what does the Ramban say, Jonathan?
That no matter what, by Lekalam Ekam Ola d'melsa, you
into shuda. Right, it'll be shuda if you could do, if it's lekel lemekum adam melsa, if there's no facts that are going to come out, so then you'll do shuda. Otherwise, then you'll do yachlok. So, in other words, the Rimi Gash seems more excited about Yachloku as a go-to plan. While in the Ramban, it's a little bit less ideal. And really, you would rather do Shuda. I'm really trying to stay away from the Shuda puns, but you would rather do Shuda. But if you Ikal Mekum Odem Elsa, that's a reason not to do Shuda. That's a reason that Shuda could end up embarrassing Bezdin. Because if Bezdin declares a Shuda psak, they decide arbitrarily, however you understand it, or based on their best guess, that one party gets it and the other party doesn't, and then facts come out the other way, that's going to embarrass our Bezdin. So we want to do Shuda, as long as we're not stopped by and then we'll have to do Yachloku. That's the Ramban. And the Rimi Gash will prefer Yachloku as long as we have Dvaru D'Mamona. So there is a discussion about this in the Sefer Birkas Avram. If you're familiar, it's a popular Sefer in a lot of Masechtas by Rabbi Avram Erlinger, who is one of the Rashi Yeshiva in Kol Torah, I believe, in Rosh Hashanah and Orbach's Yeshiva. So in the Birkas of Ram and Baba Basra, he talks about this. And his basic premise is that the machlokas here is, how do we relate to Yachloku? Is Yachloku Bezdin imposing a pshara? Right? And this is again something that we spoke about at some length at the beginning of the Zman, so this is why also the sugya really ends up plugging everything back into itself. So is Yachloku essentially Bezdin imposing a pshara? And therefore, maybe we're somewhat hesitant to do that. Or should we say that Yachloku is really kind of automatic? You don't need Bezdin to do anything. Right, if you recall, we discussed this a little bit in the last month, that maybe Yachloku is just a reflection of the facts on the ground. Each one has their own quasi chazaka, so each one gets half. And you don't need Bezdin to do anything at all. So he suggests that that's what's at issue here. That if you think Bezdin is imposing a pshara of Yachloku, so you're more hesitant to do it. But if you believe that the facts themselves provide the automatic yachloku, so then Bezdin keeps their hands clean. They're not risking a mistake so much. So then we're happy to let it happen. And he suggests that that also correlates to the definition of Dvaru D'Mamona, which here he's assuming there's a difference between Shaychus and Leka Tanoseihem, and that the Rimi Gash agrees with Tosfos. Says, what does it mean to say Beleka Tanoseihem Yesh Safek LeBezdin? It means that the Safek is inherent in the situation. So the Chalukah, so to speak, the 50-50 split, is inherent in the facts without them saying anything. So when you have a Dvaru D'Mamona like that, so then the Yachloku presents itself. You don't need Bezdin to get its hands dirty by imposing the Yachloku. The Yachloku was already there. They didn't do anything. They just watched it. While if you say that Dvaru D'Mamona is more of a Shaychus, it's not that it automatically dictates that it should be split. It just gives both parties a connection to the story. So then, it's when we impose Yachloku, we're saying, listen, you guys are our two players. We don't know what's going on. So Yachloku, we're going to split it between you. Maybe that's less satisfactory than Shuda D'Daimi, which is an attempt to really try to decide who should win. Now, Shuda D'Daimi, we can't do if it's Ikala Mekum Adamilsa, because it could embarrass Bezdin. And Yachloku has less potential to embarrass Bezdin because we're not claiming that it's the real answer. We know it's not the real answer. We know it's unlikely that it's really 50-50. So there is not the potential of zilzul beza, zilus de beidina in yachloku as much, because it's clearly a compromise. But because it's clearly a compromise, maybe that's b'di'evet, so we'd rather have shudda, which is an attempt to really decide who should win. Again, that was really no pun intended. But we can't do shudda if we have ikalam ikalam adamelsa. So if we have ikalam ikalam adamelsa, and we had no shudda, so then we could take hold of alam gvar. But if we had ikalam ikalam adamelsa and no drara, we could take hold of alam gvar. But if we have drara, so then we're afraid that the kol alam gvar is going to end up taking away somebody's right to the story. So you put those two together, so then you have to do yachloku. You have ikalam ikalam adamelsa and drara d'mamona, we have to do yachloku, because we can't do kol alam gvar because the drara d'mamona, and we can't do shuda because of the ikalam ikalam adamelsa. So Nebuch, we're left with yachloku. That's how he perceives this this view of the Ramban to be. Well, according to Rebbe Gash, we like Yachloku, so we'll do Yachloku as long as we can, and even if it's a case of Lekka Lamekim with the Mills. Does everyone understand that? Be happy to say it again. Any questions about that? It's complex. Please feel free to say it one more time. Yes.
So when Birkas Avraham says that it depends on how you view Yachloku as either a din that doesn't, that is almost without basin or a pshara, that doesn't embarrass basin. Those are both ways of understanding Ramban. That's not.
No. The way he understands it is that essentially the Rimigash is the one who sees it as happening on its own. And therefore, he's not afraid of it, because Beis Din is not doing anything that has any downside to it. It just happens by itself. See, Yachloku has a plus and a minus, right? Yachloku, on the one hand, it's not embarrassing if it's wrong, because it doesn't really pretend to be right. But on the other hand, since it doesn't pretend to be right, we'd rather not do it at all. Why should Beis Din do something that's not really right? So if it's not really Beis Din doing it, because it's the facts by themselves, so then we're less scared of it. So that's how we see the Rimi Gash. But if Beis Din has to do it, Beis Din has to impose it, so then we're a little bit less comfortable with it, and we'll do it if we're forced into a corner. We can't do Kol Olam Gvar because of the Drar Mamona, and we can't do Shuda because the Iklam Iklam Adamilsa, so then that leaves us with Yachloku. That's the Ramban. That's how he sees it. Some clear question?
The Chazaka is what makes it that makes it look like the Yachloku is more of a.
Well, the way he says it, he aligns this with Tosus's Drar Ramona, the Baleka Tanosei Meshafik Lebezdin, and he reads that as meaning that the facts are such they present themselves as the two sides having this equal claim. You know, that's the very nature of the situation. So if that's the nature of the situation, that the facts present themselves with two sides having an equal claim, so you don't need Beis Din. Beis Din is just an enforcement agency. Yeah, they're just signing off on it, but they're not the ones imposing a pshara. They're not the ones saying, listen guys, we don't know what the story is here, so we're going to just suggest this as a compromise, which is kind of beneath their covet to be in that position. It's just the reality that this should be split, because each one has an equal claim. So that's the way he relates to it. Now again, to really close the circle here and to really bring us back to our pre-Yontif discussions, so then he goes on to note that you could see this also within the Riva. If you recall the Riva from our very first days, which I'll repeat here, that basically there was a machlokas Rabbeinu Tam in the Riva, in Tosus in the third parak of Baba Basra. Right, when do you do Yachloku? According to Rabbeinu Tam, when do you do Yachloku? When you have Ochsen. Right? But the Riva says you don't need Ochsen. Well, what was the Riva's criterion? Leka Ramai. That if you don't have a liar, so then you can do Ochsen. And then you can do Yachloku. Sorry. If you don't have a Rama, if you don't have a liar, then you can do Yachloku. That was the Riva. And we spent a few weeks with that Riva. But then we eventually got up to the fact that the Riva goes on to say something else after he says that. Now, what does the Riva say after that?
Right,
even it goes, well, the other way around, because that if they were Ochsen, he says, I don't require Ochsen. But if there is Ochsen, then even with a Ramai, I will allow Yachlok. So you could ask, it's kind of a funny thing to say, right? If it's Yachloku in both cases. So when are we considered, when are we worried about the Ramai? We're not worried about the Ramai. How do the mechanics work here? So we discussed this before Yontif. We said the Riva is probably a very strong support for the idea that there's probably two types of Yachloku. Or the Yachloku that's more of a Pshara and a Yachloku that tries to be a real din. So here he says, in this context, that you could say like this, that Yachloku essentially is Bezdin imposing a Pshara according to the Riva. And Bezdin doesn't want to impose a Pshara if one of the two parties is a liar. If we know that by its very nature one of the two parties is a Ramai, so then it's a bad role for Bezdin to be in to say, okay, listen, we're going to split this in half, we're going to cut the baby in two parts, and we'll give one half to the Ramai. Why are we going to do that? Why are we going to get ourselves involved in order to help out a Ramai? So, according to the Riva, that's what Yachloku is. It's imposing a Pshara, so we don't want to do that when there's a Ramai involved. However, if it's Shnayim Ochsen, so then we're not doing anything. Each party has their own claim to half of it. So if one of them is a Ramai, okay, but Bezdin didn't give it to him. The concern is that Bezdin shouldn't give something to a Ramai. But the Yachloku of Shnayim Ochsen, in this version, it's like the Rimigash. It's automatic. So it's not our job to punish the Ramai when we don't know who the Ramai is. But we don't want to be the person giving it to the Ramai. You follow that distinction? So that's the whole difference between the two, that Ochsen doesn't require us to give anything to anybody. While if there's no Ochsen, you could have the Yachloku, but that involves Bezdin giving something, and then we're scared off by the Ramai. Any questions about any of that? Okay, so I'll just kind of review our key points so that hopefully we're clear. But just to say a word about the sugya, so my basic feeling is, you know, it's a difficult sugya. We're perplexed by the different interpretations that you find of Gerard de Mamona and the fact that our Gemara throws us a curveball by very possibly using the words in a different context. And that makes the sugya a difficult one. But I think ultimately it's very satisfying because it's a very nice complement to what we did before Yontif. That now seeing how these different interpretations of what Gerard Ramona means helps us to understand why we would choose one method over the other and brings us back to all the topics we discussed before Yontif. That does Bezdin have a default preference for Pshara or for Din? Is there different types of Yachloku? What role does Ochsen play? All of the issues that we talked about before Yontif, I think, are deepened by comparing them to this Gerard Mamona discussion and by checking all of the different points against each other and seeing how they meld or don't meld. So it's ultimately a nice companion piece, I think, and something that takes our whole discussions to another level. And I hope you found it that way as well. So I will recap the key points that we said today, and then we'll have a little break. Tomorrow will be a Chumash day, and Sunday will be a Bekiyas day, and God willing, Monday we'll start fresh with Migo. It's a whole different Shas issue. Allow us to focus a little bit on some different themes other than the core Yachloku question. Okay, so what did we see today? So we saw, having recapped those four views in Gerard Mamona and seeing they could be anywhere between one and four, because theoretically if you wanted to, you could harmonize any one of the views with each other and make a case that it's all one thing, or you could say that they're nuanced and different from each other. And then we talked a little bit more about the Ketzos, about how within our interpretation that we think Dror de Mamona and Ochsen are essentially either forms of the same spectrum or close enough that they take the same role in the equation. So it's not so different, Shnayim Ochsen and the first Daf in Bava Basra. And therefore, we're less worried about the Ketzos' question about one against each other. But separate from that, we also noted other approaches to the Ketzos' question. The fact that the Ketzos' question that what's the difference between the two cases? So we saw that there were some differences that were suggested. That Nassim Gestetner's suggestion that in the case of the wall, each one acknowledges the other's seat at the table, while in the case of the talus, that's not the case, and through discussing it, we came up with, therefore, a little bit of a different spin on Dror Mamona. Dror Mamona means you have a shaychus to the case that's so objective that the other party can't deny it. And Rav Uzner's spin on it, that the difference is, that in the case of the wall will always have an inherent suffix to it, and the chalukah will always be the feature of this wall, no matter what, while when it comes to the talus, the chalukah is only happening because the two parties are expressing claims over it. And then the question, the other half of the Ketzos' question, why does Tosfos and Bava Basra not just say Ochsen? So we saw a number of different approaches. First of all, in our approach, it's essentially equivalent to Ochsen, it's just the Ochsen that's relevant here. To take that a step further, that if I could say Ochsen, or I could say Dror de Mamona, as the Nos Imperio expresses, I'd rather say Dror de Mamona. Because the connection between Dror de Mamona and Yachloku is the Beferish Gemara in the third paragraph of Bava Basra. And the idea that Yachloku is the key factor is something, the idea that Ochsen is a key factor is something that Rishonim bring in. So I'd rather say Dror de Mamona if I could say either. Secondly, or thirdly, to say that Tosfos could have said Ochsen in Bava Basra, why should I assume that? The Ketzos is connecting the Rambam's Arima statement to Ochsen. But there's a lot of reasons to not allow Tosfos to say that. First of all, maybe Tosfos doesn't agree with the Rambam. And in fact, that was how we presented it before Yantif, that the Rambam is a different view than Tosfos, one that does not require Ochsen. So to say that the Arima gives you a reason to say Ochsen here is difficult for a number of reasons. And besides that, the Rambam's Chiddush by the Arima is probably, as way some explain it, based on some type of a kinyan that's created between the proximity or the ownership in that case, which is not going to be relevant here where there are different facts quite literally on the ground, pun intended. So so that's a number of objections one could have to the Ketzos. And then we discussed whether the Ketzos was also working off of a Tosfos definition of Dror de Mamona, or was he working off of other Rishonim? As Jonathan pointed out, it's hard to believe that Tosfos would ignore the explicit Tosfos when Tosfos says what he thinks it means. So it's more palatable to say, like the Nos Imperio and others, that it's all one harmonized interpretation, that Tosfos agrees that it's Shaychus, and that's how he formulates Shaychus. If you assume that there's a difference between Shaychus and Lekatanusayim Yeshafik Lebezdin, so then one could possibly suggest, as some do, that there are different thresholds for Yachloku, and they reflect different levels of support of Yachloku. Well, we do Yachloku whenever we can, or only whenever we have to. And then we saw that also in the context of the Machlokus between the Ramban and the Rimigash, that the Rimigash says we'll do Yachloku whenever there's Dror de Mamona, and the Ramban says only if it's Ikka L'Mekum Ala D'Milsa. If it's Lekka L'Mekum Ala D'Milsa, so then we're going to do Shuda. And we discussed the Birkas Avram's approach to that, that the Rimigash likes Yachloku, thinks it's a good approach, and therefore we'll do it whenever we can when there's Dror de Mamona. And the Ramban doesn't like Yachloku so much. It's Bezdin forcing a pshara that doesn't reflect anything real, and therefore we'll only do it if we're forced into a corner. So the Rimigash thinks it's available because Lekka Tanaseyim Yeshafik means it's inherently there, it doesn't need us to do anything, so why not take advantage of it whenever it's possible? And the Ramban thinks we're involved in doing something, so therefore We'd rather do kol da'olam gvar, but we can't if it's drar de mamona. Then we'd rather do shuda, but we can't if it's ikolam edigamala de milsa, because it could end up embarrassing bezdin. So if we can't do shuda or kol da'olam gvar, then we're stuck with yachloka. And then we discussed how we said that's also pshat in the two approaches of the Riva. The Riva says you don't need ochsin, you just have to make sure there's no ramai in order to do yachloku. But if there is ochsin, we'll do it even if there is a ramai. And he said, consistent with things we said before Yantiv, that there are two different yachlokus. There's a yachloku that Sapshara Bezdin is imposing, and there's a yachloku that happens without us. So in the case of where there's no ochsin, so Bezdin is doing something, so we need that there shouldn't be a ramai, because Bezdin can't give it to a ramai. But if there is ochsin, so then the Riva will say, then fine, then let the chips fall where they may, because ochsin means things happen on their own, and Bezdin doesn't have to do anything, and even if the ramai gets it, the Bezdin is not giving it to the ramai, and that's less of a concern for us. Okay, so any questions on any of that? Okay, so that should bring a close to our first Yachloku alternate venues, Drar D'Mamona chapter. So again, we'll pick up with Migo, God willing, on